Hello, everybody. Welcome back. It's Friday, and it's another episode of The Philosopher's Stone. Although you probably won't get this till what, tomorrow maybe? Excuse me while I adjust my microphone levels here a little bit. Okay. What's going on, Sam?
Oh, man. It has been snowing steadily all day.
Really? Oh, shit.
The inevitable bitch slap of late March, April.
Ugh, we don't get that here anymore.
No.
I woke up to the smell of fucking forest fires. That's what I woke up to the smell of.
Yeah, I was waiting for you to mock me for having to endure snow, and then I was going to throw the fires right back at you, but you beat me to it.
You were setting me up, hey? It actually looks like it's pretty overcast today, and the smoke has cleared. But we found out it was a planned burn. It was a planned burn to burn some unwanted underbush, whatever.
They're all planned burns.
Oh, fuck, I forgot. You're right. But that being said, it's going to be a smoky summer because we did not get, like, we had 2 weeks of snow and then, like, pretty much nothing. Usually this time of year, the rivers are high and running. Raging, they look like low right now, which is terrifying.
That's bad.
It is bad. So, oh well, what can you do? You can just hang on until we get slowly dragged to our painful death at the hands of climate change debating what kind of bathrooms we should have.
Man, we're gonna have to learn how to be the Fremen, I think, in our future.
Yeah. I'm not cut out for that shit. I know I'm not. I go even like going to the beach.
Yeah, we don't have the faith necessary.
Can't handle that much sand.
I don't know what's going to happen this summer. Hopefully it's not the worst, but it'll probably be bad.
It's going to be bad. I hope that, because we have weddings. We have a few weddings this year. I hope they don't get smoked out. I mean, they probably won't, but... Well, that's not true. There was a couple that was supposed to get married last year, and they delayed their wedding. I don't even think they've rescheduled it yet because the fires. In that case, the fires were like threatening to burn down the venue, so it's a little bit different. But we might be having some smoky outdoor weddings this year, which sucks because usually if you do stuff early in the summer, you're fine, and then August is like a write-off a lot of the times.
Yeah, it used to be the fire season started in August, but now it's much, 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 much sooner.
There are legitimate forest fires already burning in BC, which is super terrifying.
That is mind-blowing.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know.
What's the solution, Sam? Why don't you give us a solution here? What do we do?
The solution is we have to adapt. That's the solution.
We're not good. I mean, we are good at that, but as a society, we're not good at that.
No, we can't solve global warming. We can't solve it. The world's just going to change, and we're just going to have to adapt.
We can solve it. We just won't solve it. That's the problem. It's very solvable. Could you imagine if everyone in all of humanity could just get on one page for just like a month and work towards a single goal together? COVID kind of did have hints of like a unified effort, but it also had an extremely divisive effect. So it was like I think a lot of the world's scientists and researchers got on the same page and worked tirelessly to give us a vaccine or whatever they could, you know, and figure out exactly what was going on. And then, but by the end of the pandemic, like all solidarity, there was a moment at the beginning where people were like uniting from across the aisle, you know.
Yeah.
That did not last long.
Nope. I don't know. I think part of the reason that I feel like the reason we can't solve climate change, like maybe we could, but why we won't, is that it seems like if the only way to solve it is to have less people emitting stuff, less people in the world is the only way to reduce emissions.
No, it's not.
Industrial scale emissions. Then emissions are on an industrial scale.
From what I understand, it's like four or five giant corporations that are causing most of it. Or is that some leftist propaganda?
No, I 100% agree that it's being caused by a handful of actors. However, the only reason they cause it is because it's business. Like, they're making money.
Yeah.
By causing it. They
so we have to people. All we have to do is solve the natural greed that lives inside all of humanity's soul.
I don't even know. I mean, I feel maybe I'm so pessimistic.
No, I'm not as pessimistic as you. I think that people the social climate is generally heading towards we don't like this, so we better do. And then that'll be when the public starts demanding clean energy, it'll become profitable. And as soon as it becomes profitable enough for them to do it, then they'll do it. It's all about the Benjamins, baby. They just have to make clean energy profitable. And I think it'll be a slower change than than that's ideal. But there are actually improvements to climate. Like, climate change is, there are people that are developing technologies that are making a difference when it comes to climate change. But it just is, it's a very slow rate. But like I've always said, once a lot of people become physically uncomfortable because of climate change, they will start demanding that our leaders do something. Because right now, too many people are still too comfortable, right? We, in Canada and BC, we have a few uncomfortable months of smoke. But once those few months become like 4 months and then 5 months and then you can't even go outside for a few months, then people are going to have a real incentive to get this clean energy ball rolling.
Yeah, I just like when is the switch gonna flip from this is caused by something that we could stop if we changed energy, because everyone knows that right now and nothing's happened.
It's because it's people not think affecting it's
caused
people.
By other things. They think the forest fires are planted or they're caused by bad forestry management or like anything else.
It is a bit of bad forestry management, but that's not the main thing. The main thing is definitely that it is becoming undeniable that every year is getting worse and worse, at least where I live. Like, it's undeniable. People still do deny it, but once enough people are getting affected by this, once it's like normal for like half the summer to be spent indoors because of smoke, like, it's going to be pretty hard to deny what's happening.
Yeah, and this is, I think this is another reason for pessimism is I guess I think it's going to take so long to get to that point that the damage is already done. And in a lot of ways, the damage is already done right now. Like, the effects that we see are just, it's like we boiled the water, we've like had heat under the pot for so long that even if you turn the heat off now, it's still going to carry on for a while being fucked up.
But they do have, they are making advancements in like CO2 scrubbing machines, like technology.
Okay. Yeah.
Like, in major, I don't know. Do you ever hear of that, the YouTube channel, Kurzgesagt? We used to watch it all the time.
Oh, yeah. Kurzgesagt. Yeah.
Their video on climate change changed my opinion a little bit. I mean, we're still definitely heading in a terrible direction, but it's not like no one's doing anything about it. Like, lots of people are doing things about it. And then I heard climate change expert type guy on a podcast with Sam Harris, who lots of people, I guess, consider like a leftist now. But
Sam Harris?
Yeah.
He's a middle.
That's what I figure him to be, a centrist.
He's very much a centrist. Yeah.
Most of the stuff I hear him discuss is very rational thinking, in my opinion. But anyways, he had this expert on, and the expert was pretty much like, it is bad, but it's not as bad as people are saying it is.
Or like, not as irreversible, I guess. Or
he said the time frame is probably not as imminent as people believe or people are saying. It's any issue. It's like any issue is going to be politicized, right? So
yeah,
the people that are wanting to put in like extreme measures against climate change, maybe they are a little bit jumping the gun, or they're motivated by other things, but something has to be done, and it is, it's just it has to be done faster.
Yeah. I agree wholeheartedly. I just feel like the clean energy tech can't replace fossil fuels without massive investment. That won't happen.
It will happen once enough people are uncomfortable. That's what I'm saying. Uncomfortability is the catalyst of change.
Yeah, I mean, it would be great if the Green Party wasn't such a bunch of shitheads. That would be great.
We need realistic plans, okay? Not everybody can't drive a car now. Like, we need realistic plans. We can't grind the gas, like the fossil fuel industry, to a halt tomorrow. That just is not realistic. We need oil. We need oil for not just our vehicles, but for every product that pretty much we make, right?
Hey, you got to make plastic somehow.
Yeah, we need more microplastics.
Those smart bottles don't make themselves.
I think a lot of people don't realize how much oil is in it is actually in everything we use, like plastics and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And just like we can't just wean ourselves off fossil fuels in like a couple of years. It has to be a gradual change. Obviously, we would probably still be using oil, taking oil from the ground to make products, unless someone finds an alternative that's cheaper and more efficient. It's all about the money, right? We've already decided that.
Yeah.
But it's about figuring out how to make clean energy more profitable than fossil fuels. And that's a problem.
It is a problem. And hopefully one that can be solved by somebody, but not by us today, unfortunately.
Well, I thought we were getting pretty close, but yeah, you know what? There's more important matters to discuss, I'm sure.
Well, you know, it's, yeah, fossil clean energy, fossil fuels, great debate. You want to know what is another great debate?
What?
Is, physicalism.
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 Ah, this sounds like it's going to be hard to understand.
I think it's not going to be that bad. I think all it's right. going to be okay. I might hopelessly butcher this, but I don't know.
All right. Any of our listeners listening to this, don't give up yet. Don't pause. Don't skip this episode just because you heard the word physicalism and you were like, nope.
it's not as crazy as you think.
Okay.
But we've done a few, I think we've done a couple episodes recently where we talked about like paranormal psychology, ESP,
mm-hmm.
Which is like an idea that there's more to the physical world than just there's more to the world than just physical things.
Oh, yeah. Oh, dude, I don't know if this is really related, but I had a dream this morning that I felt myself dying. Like I died in my dream, but I felt the process of dying like viscerally in my dream. It was nuts.
Whoa.
Yeah.
I've always, what did it feel like being drained out of a tub or
sort of, yeah, it did kind of feel like my not just my consciousness, but all my energy in my body was just leaving, and not like at once, but like it didn't hurt or anything. It was scary. And then it was scary for the first few moments, but then it was like, as I got deeper into like dying, I suddenly wasn't scared. And then when I actually died in my dream, I woke up and my cat was on top of me looking at me like she was fucking walking transplane. She was like, she knew that like she had to wake me up or else I was actually going to die for real or something. I don't know if that amazing. Leads into physicalism, but I just thought it was a bizarre experience. I was like, oh my God, I'm dying. And then I felt the sensation of just life leaving me. It wasn't that bad. It was terrifying, but it wasn't that bad.
Amazing. That's amazing. Physicalism is, I mean, it's definitely related to that because you're having a dream and that's a conscious experience. And as we'll see, consciousness and qualia is one of the challenges for physicalism. Hmm. But
qualia. Can you remind me what qualia is? Just the, like, is it an, it's like the, is it like the sensation of being conscious or like self-aware, self-conscious?
Qualia are the sensations or the what it is like of being a conscious being. So okay. The taste of a strawberry is a qualia, for example.
Right.
Yeah.
It's basically the experience of, consciousness. Okay, gotcha.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, physicalism is like the physicalists don't like the paranormal thing, the dualism idea. for physicalism, it's pretty much, I mean, it takes a while to explain it, but what it boils down to is everything is physical.
So when you say they're not a fan of paranormal stuff, they're not subscribing to, you know, basically like spiritualist woo-woo stuff that has no scientific explanation.
In one sense, yeah, but it's more about like what they see as the ontology of the world. And for them, there's just everything is physical. So, and it takes a while to explain what that means to say everything is physical. There could still be ghosts and goblins, but they would have to be physical.
They would have to have like an explanation as to how they exist, right?
Yeah. I mean, here's one way you can think of it to think that is everything physical. And that is to say, what does it mean for everything to be physical? Well, it means that everything supervenes on the physical. Now, what the hell does that mean?
Fuck am I know. I've never heard that word before.
It's a really interesting idea. So imagine a painting, and the painting is made up of just dots.
Mm-hmm.
When you stand back, you can see like a picture of someone's face.
Right.
When you go in close,
the show Art Attack based its own entire premise on this.
Art Attack.
Remember that guy? That was awesome. At the end of the episode, he would do show he'd be using all the different materials to make an image, but you don't know what it is until they show the overhead thing. Yeah. Anyways, go on. I'll stop interrupting.
No, please continue. So you got all these dots, right?
Mm-hmm.
You stand back, you see someone's face. When you stand up close, you just see dots and no dots. So there's nothing more to the face than the dots and the no dots.
Mm-hmm.
So, but there's a face that we can see when we stand back from it.
Right.
So what we say is the face supervenes on the dots.
Okay.
There's nothing more to the face than the dots. The dots cause the face.
Yes.
But in a sense, the face is something distinct from the dots.
Right. It's like pixels on a screen, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Zoom right in. It's not what your screen is. It's not a display. It's just a bunch of pixels showing one color or another.
Yeah, that is exactly it. And then physicalism extends that metaphor to reality. So the dots of physicalism, you could say, are like matter, molecules, atoms. But even things that aren't just matter, like gravity or nuclear forces, those are also physical, even though they aren't matter. So those are the dots. And then everything else, people, personalities, history, art, those are all supervene on the dots.
Mm-hmm.
There's really nothing more to them than the dots, but they do seem distinct because they sort of emerge from the dots, I guess.
It's dots all the way down.
It's all the way down. Yeah. So that's an interesting thing. That sort of suggests that for physicalism, they would say everything ultimately can be reduced to some sort of physical explanation, even if it's really difficult and torture.
Like everything is just basically can be reduced to, like, I guess not gravity. Gravity and electromagnetic forces are not, those aren't, those, there are no particles involved with that, right?
I don't know. I
need to ask like a quantum physicist about that.
Well, no, like, there are particles involved. There are particles.
There's particles involved when I guess gravity is all about mass. So I don't know. I don't, once again, out of my depth here.
But there's also like action at a distance. There's like electromagnetism. There's no particles really. It's a field.
Right.
I think photons, like electrons, are kind of in one place, multiple places at once in a weird way. It's not necessarily matter, but it's physical.
Mm-hmm.
There's another philosophy called materialism that says everything is matter, and that came before physicalism.
and actually the first philosopher of all time may have been Thales, mm-hmm. said everything is water.
I thought that was Bruce Lee.
Ah, yes.
All right, cool. Nice. Cool. Well, nowadays the hippies say everything's vibrations, man.
It's true. Everything is vibrating.
And then they quote string theory because they know that the word vibration is used in string theory to describe things. And then they hijack that.
Yeah. So much stuff is just like nonsense that people read off of physics. And then,
oh, yeah. Oh, they just misinterpret experiments and yeah, like this. I think the Schrodinger cat thing is frequently not discussed properly.
Yeah, people are. I think it's the, was it the Schrodinger's cat or the double slit light experiment?
Both, but definitely the double slit, because it's all about observation, right?
Yeah, people think your consciousness is what.
That's what people took from it, and then they ran with it, and now there's like a billion like spiritualist manifestation self-help books out there. People made careers off of that one misinterpretation of that one experiment.
Yeah, remarkable. Okay, so there's a of course there's a problem for the supervenience idea, and the problem is that this idea that everything supervenes on the physical, it tells us what's a necessary condition, but it does not tell us a sufficient condition.
So, wait, can you say that one more time?
So they say that, okay, you say everything supervenes on the physical,
mm-hmm.
and that's what it means for everything to be physical.
Right.
Problem. Maybe it's necessary for everything to supervene on the physical to be physical, but maybe that's not enough. Maybe you need something more to be physical.
So there's some sort of physical mechanism for every single everything that exists.
If physicalism is true, yes. Mm-hmm. But here's an objection to this one idea, because there's lots of, we're not going to discuss all of them, but there are lots of different arguments for physicalism, and supervenience is just one of the most popular. But the objection to supervenience is that you could be a dualist, and a dualist thinks physicalism is false.
Mm-hmm.
And a dualist will say, okay, it could still be true that everything supervenes on the physical, but mental facts could still be fundamentally different from non-mental facts.
Mental facts.
Yeah. So qualia,
okay.
Consciousness, experience, those kinds of things.
Right, right, right.
So that's one objection to it. Hume, our old friend, David Hume, he thinks this isn't a problem because there could be no necessary relationship between two totally different categories. In this case, he's saying there's no way a mental fact could supervene on a physical fact.
Okay, hang on a second. I gotta wake my brain up a little bit more here. Say that again one more time.
Okay, so David Hume is saying, this is like one of the problems for dualism. David Hume is saying there's no way.
You have to be mental... smart to understand it. That's the main problem. Okay, say it. Okay, I'm really focusing now. Okay, I got my eyes closed. I'm going to listen to nothing but your words. Okay, hit me again.
Okay, so the objection was, the dualist says, mental facts could supervene on the physical and yet be fundamentally distinct from non-mental facts. If that's true, then physicalism is false. Hume says that can't be true because you cannot have any like a necessary relationship between two distinct categories. So the non-physical can't have some sort of necessary relationship with a physical thing.
Okay. I'm going to say I get it, even though I really don't, but you need to move on. Let's move on, and maybe I'll just let the ideas kind of percolate into my consciousness, and maybe they'll sort it out in there.
All right, I have high hopes for that.
Okay, thank you. I appreciate you believing in me.
All right, here's another definition of physicalism, totally different. This is from the philosopher Alyssa Ney, and it is, quote, "Physicalism is an attitude one takes to form one's ontology completely and solely according to what physics says exists," end quote.
Right.
That seems pretty easy to understand.
Yeah. I get it. I kind of get it.
Yeah.
I think physicalism is just kind of almost self-explanatory, right? Mm-hmm. Physics should be able to explain everything, including stuff that doesn't seem to have any physical properties, like qualia.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Good enough? Yeah, close enough?
I mean, yeah, that's sort of what she's saying is like, physicalism isn't really necessarily a theory or anything like that. It's this attitude that you take where I'm going to limit my ontology to what physics can talk about.
All right. Can we just for people that don't know, I know what ontology means. I know, but for the people that don't know, maybe you could explain it to those people.
Ontology is quite simply just what exists. What exists in your world?
Your view of what is actually real.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Your belief of what is actually real.
Yeah. So our ontology includes things like rocks and water and fire and earth and wind.
Mm-hmm.
But if you came from the planet Mercury, you might not be aware of water. Water might not be part of your ontology.
Oh, shit. Okay.
But you would have an incomplete ontology. It wouldn't mean that our ontology was wrong because it included water. It would just mean the people on Mercury don't know about everything yet.
Right. Only God has a complete ontology.
Yeah. Only God knows exactly what's going on.
Right. He just doesn't want to tell us everything. He likes to watch us squirm. That's what he likes.
Yes. Okay. Well, unfortunately, this theory, while it's very, well, this definition of physicalism, while it's very easy to understand, has some serious problems.
What did you just say to my fucking face? Very easy to understand.
Here's one of the first problems. I'm not totally convinced by this objection, but this is an objection. So the objection goes that physics is a modern invention. Sociologically, the concept of doing physics is a modern invention.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't, like, in the past, people studied nature with an effort to understand it, but they didn't do so in the same way or with the same assumptions that physicists bring to the table today.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you could call the cavemen back in the day figuring out which shape of a rock rolls the best physicists in their own right.
Perhaps. Perhaps, I guess.
You know what I mean? Like, they're experimenting with how things interact with gravity and friction. They just don't know that they're doing. I mean, they're not scientists. They didn't write any papers, but they figured out stuff through trial and error. So they learned the physical properties of things and what can be useful and what's not through basically like primitive scientific techniques, right?
Yeah, sure. We could call it like primitive science. I mean, they don't have the scientific method or hypotheses or like any of that stuff. I mean, maybe they did. I don't know.
It's just observational science, I guess. All right. Well,
yeah, this is partly why I don't like this objection very much, but.
Okay. So cavemen were not, they wouldn't be considered physicists. All right. Just want to clear that up for you idiots listening to this.
Okay. However, like we said earlier, there's the philosopher Thales. There's also philosopher Democritus, who said all that exists are atoms.
Mm-hmm.
You could say that these guys are physicalists, even though they aren't
doing what we would call modern day physics.
Right.
Anyway, I don't really like that objection that much, but the second one's a bit better. Imagine, and this one is from Alyssa Ney herself, who says, imagine it's the year 3000 AD and physicists finally have to accept that mental properties like consciousness and qualia are irreducible, and so they include those in physics as non-reducible mental entities that can't be reduced to atoms or forces.
They don't think that consciousness and the qualia is just a byproduct of chemical and electrical.
Well, this is like a hypothetical objection where physicists fail to reduce consciousness to the physical. So physics would say there are non-reducible mental entities.
Right.
But physicalism does not allow any non-reducible entities.
So what's your personal opinion on that? Because to me, it's like, all right, you won't have consciousness unless you have physical things that manifest it. So they have to be linked physically somehow, right?
Well, this is just a hypothetical objection to physicalism.
Okay.
This is an objection to saying that physicalism means you just form your ontology based on what physics says.
Right.
Because it may turn out one day that physics says qualia are not physical.
Okay.
And so then physics would be saying physicalism is false.
Right. Okay. So if there's something that comes along in science that can't be explained with anything physical, then physicalism is pretty much dead in the water.
Yeah. If you're basing it on physics.
Okay.
What physics says.
All right. I'll take your word for it.
Well, yeah, that's because lots of physicists are not physicalists. Well, okay, I shouldn't say lots of them, but there are definitely plenty of physicists who, for example, believe in God and stuff like that.
Yeah, but I wonder how, when they say they believe in God, they're probably not meaning it in the exact same way as, say, religious people or spiritualists say they believe in God. You know what I mean?
I mean, unless they think God is like a physical entity, like an alien or something like that, I think they do really mean like a deist idea.
Like something they can have a personal relationship with?
Yeah, I would strongly believe that I don't know, more than 50%, but there's definitely a proportion of physicists who would believe they have a soul and God is real and all that jazz.
That's interesting.
Einstein believed that, I thought, right? Or maybe he didn't. I don't know.
I find that strange.
It's true. It's true. Lots of very intelligent scientists in physics, biology are religious.
But can they explain why they're religious beyond fear of the unknown?
Oh, you mean, is there a case against physicalism?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, there is.
Okay. Glad to help this conversation move along, transition smoothly.
It's perfect. Right at 30 minutes is perfect. Yeah, so this is the thing, right? Like a lot of science, like, just because someone's a physicist doesn't necessarily mean they're going to believe in physicalism.
Right.
And there are plenty of objections to that. But right before we get to the objections, we have to say one more thing, right? Because this is philosophy and we have to get a little split some hairs a little bit here.
Yeah. God forbid we can understand everything about a conversation we have.
So we've said what it means for everything to be physical. Right. Mm-hmm. We have not said what it is for one thing to be physical. What are the conditions that one thing needs to satisfy to be physical? Like, for example, your pen or your microphone.
Yes.
What
How would you know that that's a physical object?
How would I know?
Yeah. How do you know it's a physical object?
Am I allowed to trust my senses in this hypothetical?
You don't have to say if it's real or not real. Well, maybe you do, but yeah, use your senses. What are your senses?
Well, first thing that I would do is I pick it up. Okay. My hand couldn't touch it. It doesn't go right through it. All right. And when I touch it to other objects, it stops. It doesn't go through those objects. It has a specific textures and properties. When I click the click pen, there's a sound that comes out. So I know that there's got to be something coming from somewhere that's reaching my ears. basically, just using my senses, you know, lick, touch, put it up my nose, put it up my butt. And if all of those feel good, I know it's real.
That's perfect. Yeah, you used a great word there, property.
Mm.
It has properties. And you could say that one definition for physical is an object is physical if and only if its properties are the kinds of properties that physical objects have.
Exactly. One of the main things is it interacts how you would expect it to with other physical objects, I guess, right?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah.
I took it this pen like and I dropped in it and it went right through the desk. I would either think something that the desk isn't real or the pen isn't real. That would be my first thoughts.
Yeah, because one of them has a property. Yeah, that's just seems non-physical. Doesn't seem like a property that a physical thing would have. Yeah,
exactly.
Okay. So now we can talk about objections. So the first objection, I think we've talked about it before, but it comes from qualia and consciousness, specifically the knowledge argument. Do you remember the knowledge argument about the color scientist who lives in a black and white world?
I don't. Did we talk about this before?
I think we probably have touched on it. It's so famous.
Yeah. But, okay. Do it again. Run it back. Right.
Run it back. So this argument was, apparently it's been around in many forms, but it was sort of, it got its best treatment from the philosopher Frank Jackson.
Frank Jackson, philosopher.
See, philosophers had real good names back in the day.
Yeah.
Frank Jackson.
Hume is not a good name.
No. We need more Frank Jacksons. And
Frank Jackson sounds like he's like, I'm a philosopher, but I have a gang of outlaws.
Yeah. I'm a good woodworker.
Yeah.
Or Ned Block. That's a good one. All right. So Frank Jackson comes up with this scenario about this famous color scientist named Mary, mm-hmm. who lives in a black and white room for her whole life.
Right.
And she learns about the world through black and white television and books, all black and white.
Mm-hmm.
And she learns everything that physics can teach her about the world, including neuroscience, biology. She just knows everything about physics and physical facts. And yet, she, according to Jackson, she does not know everything. If physicalism were true, you could say that Mary knows everything about the world because she knows all the physical facts. But Frank Jackson says, well, actually, she doesn't know all. She doesn't know everything yet, because if she leaves that room, she will see colors. And she would not know. This will be new information for her. She did not, and the new information specifically will be the qualia in her brain.
The qualia. Right, so it's one thing to know every physical property about what colors are and why they are, what color they are, and how light works and how rods and cones work and the eyes and how that's translated into the brain as an image. She can know all the facts. She could write out exactly how colors work on a piece of paper, start to finish. But she still doesn't know what it's like to see the color.
Yeah, precise. So the qualia is not included amongst the physical facts.
Hmm.
So qualia is not a physical fact.
There was this guy on back when I still had TikTok. I deleted it because my algorithm got
I've heard that from a lot of people. Their algorithms are fucked on
my algorithm got so fucked by flat earthers. It was just all flatter, and it was because I was spending so much time on those videos reading the comments, because they're I find it endlessly amusing how dumb some of these people are. And then TikTok's like, well, we must have a flat earther on our hands, let's just give them all flat earth shit. I had to delete it. Also, it's just like, it is really, it's really addictive in a weird way, even more so than just flipping through reels on Facebook for whatever reason. TikTok specifically is like, you could spend 20 minutes scrolling without watching more than 1 second of a clip, and you're just, somehow your brain is still getting hit with a little bit of dopamine. It's fucked. I think a TikTok ban is great. I think it's a great idea. I'm not all for, like, I'm not for it because of the Chinese government is spying on us, although that's not a great, but I really do think it is absolutely decimating the attention span of the kids that are growing up right now.
Yeah. Yeah. TikTok bad. I don't do the whole reels thing. I'm not in the real world.
The real world. You got to stay in the real world. When me and Chelsea find ourselves just sucked into our phones when we're trying to watch it, we'll be like watching a movie, and then suddenly we'll both be on our phones just scrolling. I call it scroll. We're a couple of scroll trolls. We got to stop it.
Scroll trolls.
Yeah.
Nice. All right.
Right. That brings me back to the point I was going to make. There was a guy that I was watching on TikTok who was born blind, and that his whole channel was people asking him questions about what it's like to be born blind. And his descriptions of his relationship with colors is so much different than our relationship, because he still has a relationship with colors. It's just very based on like, well, I know fire is red, I know hot is red, I know cold is blue. So he has to relate it to other things, but he does not know what it's actually like to see red or blue.
Flames can be blue, unfortunately.
Well, don't tell it to this guy, because he's all you've got a tenuous relationship with color.
All right. So that's the argument, and there are a lot of when you read it, it seems like, wow, he just proved it. He proved quali are not physical, but there are ways to object to this argument, and I think the objections are good.
Okay.
Specifically, there's this objection about different types of knowledge, and this is from the philosopher Lawrence Nemiroff. And basically, the idea is that there are different kinds of knowledge. There is propositional knowledge, or knowledge that. So knowledge that is like, you know, a statement is true, or like a fact. Like, for example, what's the capital of France?
Mm-hmm.
Paris.
Right.
We have the knowledge that. We know that fact. Or you could say... And then there's a different kind of knowledge. Knowledge how. Like, how do you ride a bike? I know how to ride a bike.
Right.
Now, knowledge that and knowledge how are very different. For example, you could write out a step-by-step guide to riding a bike, but then you wouldn't actually be able to ride a bike because you don't know how.
Right. So you don't have any of the muscle memory and like... sensation of riding a bike that if you've never ridden a bike, you just don't know what the feeling of riding a bike is. Okay. I feel like I'm staying the most obvious shit in the world right now, but
yeah,
you could memorize all the mechanical stuff that goes into riding a bike, what muscles you need, what gears, how the gears are pulling the chain that are pulling on the other gear that's making the tire spin, and how it behaves on the ground, like that, all that stuff, like all the facts, but you still don't know the feeling of riding a bike.
Yeah, exactly. You could memorize the manual, but then that doesn't mean you have the knowledge to ride the bike.
Mm-hmm. You can also just watch, like before you ever have sex, you watch other people have sex, and you can try and imagine what it's like, but you just don't know until you do it.
Excellent. Excellent point.
Everything relates back to sex. And you know what? You think you would last longer.
Yeah. That's great. So yeah, like the idea here is that, look, Mary, when she's in the black and white world, all of her physical knowledge, she's only getting knowledge that. She is not getting ability knowledge, but the knowledge how of color.
Experiential knowledge.
Yeah, there's two different kinds of knowledge. She's been limited from experiential knowledge. It doesn't mean the experiential knowledge is not physical. Physical right. knowledge. Yeah.
She's just been, she's just had certain things withheld from her. Like the example you gave with the Venetians or whatever. What planet did you say?
Mercury. Mercurians.
Mercurial. They don't have water. That doesn't mean water. They don't know about water. That doesn't mean water doesn't exist.
Correct. Yeah, exactly.
Or they could know what water is, chemical makeup and some of its properties, but they've never been swimming.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. All right. So I think that one's an interesting one, but yeah, I think there's a ways to argue against it. And then there's a few more that are interesting. Numbers is another objection to physicalism. These are like called abstract objects.
Right.
So numbers, like the number two. Mm-hmm. This is like an interesting thing. If you were to ask ChatGPT, like, where is the number two? It'll give you some answer, but it's not going to be able to tell you where to go to get the number two.
Where is base two? I need to find the leader, the original two. Where does it reside? Yeah. Could you imagine if all numbers had like locations you had to go to?
That's the thing, right? Like earlier we said, what does it take for something to be physical? Well, it has properties of that physical things have. The numbers don't seem to have any of the properties that a physical thing would have. They don't have a location. They don't have a mass. They don't have a velocity, a momentum, and anything.
But aren't numbers just like words in the sense that they're a language to describe physical things?
That's a great point. And I think that would probably be a really good objection to that.
God damn it. See, I could have just been such a good philosopher. If only I applied myself.
Yeah. I mean, I think what you are saying is, I don't know if I see it here on the Stanford Encyclopedia. But numbers are just words that we use to talk about reality. Mm-hmm. But we can do math, right? We can do math like 5 + 3 = 8. Mm-hmm. Where are those numbers?
Well, it's just like if I was describing a red car to you, it's like, all right, where's the red car? It's nowhere. I just described a hypothetical.
But 5 + 3 = 8, that's not hypothetical. That's a true statement.
Well, red cars are true. I mean, like numbers have to be applied to physical things before they have an effect on reality. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, they're hypotheticals, right? Am I insane?
Physical things can have a physical effect on reality. That's one of the properties that makes them physical.
Yes. So I'm saying numbers are not physical until they're applied to something physical.
Mm-hmm. That I can see that. Like the number, there is no number two, just like there is no unicorn until we say that's two.
Yes, or two is something that you can describe when there is more than one and less than three. I feel like I'm losing my mind.
Yeah, I'm not good with numbers, generally speaking.
But like numbers are what you use to describe physical things. Like, and you can describe the relationships between real physical things using complex math, right? From what I understand, people that are really good with math and like really do look at it as like another language can read an equation and will be able to tell you what physical phenomenon it's describing.
Yeah. Actually, I think you're right. I think your objection is here in the Stanford Encyclopedia.
I should be a freaking professor over there at Stanford, I'm pretty sure, at this point.
They're saying this is the third view, quote, more attractive than either of the two mentioned so far, is properties of abstract objects are topic neutral. Topic neutral properties have the interesting feature that they themselves are not physical, but are capable of being instantiated in what is intuitively a completely physical world.
That's exactly what I mean. I put it in better. I think I did it better, but
yeah, you did it better.
I don't know why amazing. He's adding all this extra fluff in there, but
amazing. All right, so we've dispatched the numbers thing. We've dispatched. Wiped out
colors. Knowledge
argument, colors. There's only one left, really, and that's intentionality, meaning, and intentionality. And this is the hardest of them all to understand. So I'm not really even gonna. It's this one's tough.
All right, I'm bracing myself to feel not. Yeah,
so this follows off. This follows in a weird way from what we were just talking about.
Okay.
Mental states have something that philosophers call intentionality. Intentionality in philosophy has a different meaning than it does in normal everyday language. In philosophy, intentionality means aboutness. So when you have a mental property, it's always about something. If you're having a memory what was the last cool place you went to?
Last cool place I went to?
Yeah.
Kamloops,
anything.
Well, okay, I'm not going to say Kamloops. I don't know. I was at Bernie's Supper Club last night.
Bernie's Supper Club.
For a comedy show, and that the room they do in there, I would consider a cool place.
Yes. So when you think of Bernie's Supper Club,
mm-hmm.
Your thoughts are about a certain thing.
It's about how that's a terrible name for this cool place.
Sure. Yeah, exactly. But you don't just think, you have to think about or of something.
Right. I mean, yeah. Okay. No, keep going.
And this is like hard to explain in terms of physicalism. Because aboutness doesn't seem to be a property that any physical thing has. Like a rock is not about anything, right?
Okay, this is getting crazy, but yeah.
Right, so that's really weird. Mm-hmm. That our thoughts are about things, and yet things can't be about anything.
Just imagining a British guy looking at it, what's this rock about?
Oh, yeah.
What's this rock's? What is your goal? What are you about? What drives you?
What drives you? Man, I don't even know if I could explain this argument. So this is from a guy named Saul Kripke.
Okay.
And to put this in perspective, one of my philosophy professors met Saul Kripke at a conference.
Mm-hmm.
And he said they were talking, and Saul Kripke was saying, like, I couldn't fall asleep last night. It was so weird. Like I didn't realize it until like the morning, but I hadn't pulled the covers over myself.
Wow. Okay.
That's Kripke, right? This guy's a brilliant philosopher.
But he can't. He's like, why am I not? Why? Usually, I feel a sensation of comfort on my body and warmth, but tonight, not so.
Yeah. Okay. And his argument is also kind of like, what the hell are you talking about? But mm-hmm. Here's the idea. So we think that intentionality, words don't actually have meaning or intentionality. This is one way to solve it. And then Kripke says you can't solve it like this. So you say words don't have intentionality or meaning. We just, speakers use them to designate things. That's it. We say red to point out something red. but red doesn't actually mean anything. It's just what we use to point things out.
Okay.
Does that kind of make sense?
Well, I mean, when you put that in the context of like every language has a different word for red.
Yeah.
Then that does kind of mean that the word itself doesn't have anything. It's just an indicator.
Yeah, exactly. We just use terms in a certain way, and that's the end of it.
Mm-hmm.
Kripke thinks he can prove this is false, and this is his argument. It's really weird. So imagine that it's true that when we use that theory of language is true.
Uh-huh.
And we have this word red, and that means the color red for a speaker, for a certain speaker.
Mm-hmm.
And yet this speaker misapplies the word. For example, Kripke's example is they are wearing a pair of red sunglasses and they look at a white piece of paper and they call it red.
Mm.
So in this situation, Kripke says, the speaker is using the word red to apply to something that is not just red, but something that is, quote, either red or white, but seen through rose-tinted spectacles.
Okay.
So now red is like the rule for using red don't really match something being actually red.
And right.
That contradicts the original claim that red means red.
Wouldn't you just assume when someone says this is red that it means that they are perceiving it to be red? Right?
But it's not just that. That is the point that we call things red because, or sorry, we. The word red has its meaning because people use it to refer to things that are red.
Right, but they use it to refer to things that looks red to them, but may not actually be red, right? See the sun behind smoke? It looks red. You call it a red sun, but the sun isn't red.
Let me think about that. For example, the word red... They're disposed to use that word for red things.
Yeah, you're supposed to use it for red stuff.
Or, sorry, disposed. They're disposed to use it for red things.
Uh-huh.
If you misapply it.
Yeah.
But it still looks red to you, right? So it still is red to them, mm-hmm. but it's not red for the other people.
Right.
So are they using it incorrectly?
They are.
If they're wearing the glasses and you see you're wearing red glasses, you see a white piece of paper and you call it red.
They're not using it incorrectly. They're just incorrect about what they are perceiving.
Okay, so they've used the word correctly. Yeah, see, that's where you disagree with Kripke, because Kripke says they're misapplying the word red when they look at the white paper and they call it red. He's saying it's not right.
Well, at least I know that I'm more comfortable when I put a blanket over me. So fuck you, Kripke. That's my final word.
Yeah. And what do physicalists say against Kripke?
Probably what I just said.
Well,
I assume he's getting bullied by other philosophers, right?
I mean, it seems to be, I think you might be right. That's what I thought as well, is that maybe they're not actually misapplying the word because they're saying that, like, they're seeing a red image.
Mm-hmm. I mean, how many different times has someone said, describe something as a color, and then you look at it and you're like, that's not green, that's blue. And it's like, okay, the reality is it's probably in the middle somewhere. It's like on a spectrum. That doesn't mean that the words were used incorrectly. It's like any word where you're trying to describe something and you're seeing it, but it's not going to be just because you don't describe it correctly down to its actual physical attributes doesn't mean that the words you were using were incorrectly used. It was just your perception of what you were describing was incorrect.
That's true. I want to make sure we're not shortchanging Kripke here, because
he comes after people.
Because I think part of his argument is that, like, the point of his argument is that it is true that people misapply meaningful words. That's true. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't jibe with, that will lead to a contradiction if you also think the dispositional theory is true. That, and if we just quickly go back, that dispositional theory is the idea that a word means what it does because the speakers tend to use that word for red things. If you take that as true, and you also take it as true that they misapply it, then that means that can't be what the word means, or else no one would ever know. I feel like I'm finally getting it.
Well, we're at the end of our episode, so good timing. Maybe you can get, if you can come up with a succinct layman's explain it like I'm five way to describe this to us, to me and the listeners next week. We'll do that.
Okay.
All right. Well, there we go. That's our episode this week. We will talk to you next week.
See ya.